Honorable member, in my union, which is going on strike now. We used to say we would wait for 30 minutes. And our constitution would say if we don't form a quorum after 30 minutes, that meeting does not sit. It's postponed automatically and we're given 7 days from that day. In the international, which I was the president of the Teachers of the World, it's 15 minutes. After 15 minutes, I dissolved it until the following day if there's no quorum. Well, I understand the problem of the passes from Acacia. Pelican passes are always on time. I know there are many streets in Acacia, Honorable Makam. And N1 also. You add N1 to that. But let me take this opportunity to welcome everybody and indicate that today's workshop is what we decided upon some time back, that we wanted to be acquainted with.
We're going to do an introduction to protocol, then the national symbol, just a brief refresher, because I'm sure as you see it here, you know the symbolism behind the symbol. Then we're going to look at official photographs, because there's a prescribed way in which official photographs should be hung. Then, a bit on the table of precedence, I'm sure that is something that you're very well acquainted with. Forms of address. How do you address an important person? How do you introduce a person? A bit of forms of communication. Then I've prepared a very brief presentation on state and official visits also, official functions, signing ceremonies and press briefings. There's a certain prescribed way in which we should handle that. Bit on official entertainment and dress code, bit on the state protocol lounges, and then we need to look, because you interact also with the diplomatic community, on what are their immunities and privileges, what are they entitled to as diplomats, and then just to look at where does this thing come from that we call state protocol and etiquette. Now, in front of you, you have three slides. The two on the side are of the United Nations General Assembly. That's an example where protocol is practiced at a multinational level. And in the middle slide, it's in front of the EU Parliament, just showing the flags, because in terms of a flag, there's also a specific protocol on how we should handle a flag. Now, to understand protocol and diplomacy, we need to look at what is diplomacy. We've got two definitions that we look at. First one, it's the application of intelligence and tact to the conduct of efficient relations between governments of independent states. That's according to Sir Ernest Sato. The second one says it's the best means devised by civilization for preventing international relations from being governed by force alone. And that's according to the Duc de Broglie. Now, it's interesting to note that both these people have titles. And the first one is an English titled person, the second one is a French one. Because in a certain period of diplomacy and protocol in the history, the French and the English governed how we practiced it. And that is why there is still today, in the world of diplomacy, a lot of French terms that we retained. For example, agrément, note verbal, démarche, etc. You will often hear the French language being brought up, and some of the terms we still retain and use as it was practiced then. They're both titled people, and it's interesting to note, in the not too far distant past, you had to have a title to be able to be a diplomat. People that did not have titles, that did not have the real connections, they were excluded from the world of diplomacy and protocol. Now, thank heavens, things have changed a bit, and today every person from every walk of life actually has the opportunity to become a diplomat. The last definition is interesting. The best means devised by civilization for preventing international relations from being governed by force alone. In our current day situation, we actually see two examples that I can quote briefly where international relations is governed by force. The example of Iraq and the Palestine-Israeli situation. And if you look at our constitution, even if you look at our coat of arms, the symbolism in our coat of arms declares that South Africa is against international relations from being governed by force. We stand for peaceful negotiations, we stand for conflict resolutions, and it's even mirrored in our coat of arms. When we discuss the coat of arms, I'll actually show you where it directly states that we stand for peaceful negotiations. Now, from very early times, human societies had the urge to communicate, and you would find that diplomats and diplomatic status actually existed very early in history. There is evidence that it was formally first practiced in 1500 before Christ already in areas such as Egypt and the first city-states of Greece. And if you look at the Far East, there's actually, in terms of their history, evidence that it was already practiced 5000 before Christ. So being a diplomat, being a protocol officer also, is a very, very old career. It's not something that just started yesterday. And we tend to say, yes, it's an Eurocentric thing, but if we look at it, it's Greece where it started, it's Egypt, and if we come closer to home, Africa, if you look at Africa, the history of Africa, the continent of Africa, the kingdom of the Ashanti, which actually still exists today, I think only last year, we had the king of the Ashanti from Ghana visit South Africa. And if you look at the kingdom of Mopungubwe, if we come closer to home, it is actually evidence that even on our own African continent, practicing diplomacy, practicing protocol is an age-old practice. So we as African people should also be proud of protocol and diplomacy. It's not just a Eurocentric thing. And if we come closer to home, as I said, the kingdom of the Mopungubwe, the artifacts that were discovered actually shows that it was a very, very advanced society that lived on our own continent. Kingdom of Mopungubwe, that beautiful golden little rhinoceros that they discovered, that's part of the artifact. It's currently being housed at the University of Pretoria, so we can actually go and see what it looks like then. We always see pictures of it, and it's interesting to note, you know, you see the picture of this beautiful golden rhinoceros, and I expected it to be this size. When I actually saw it, it's like this. Mm-hmm. But it's to show that even on our own continent, protocol must have been practiced. If you look at, just briefly, not to go back too far, King Shaka, I mean, there was a protocol in terms of his kingdom when you wanted to approach him. You couldn't just walk up to him and address him directly. There was a way that you had to approach him, to speak to him. So this is something that actually should come natural to us. Now, the first Congress of Vienna in 1815 established the international systems of diplomatic rank as we currently know it. And after World War II, the rank of an ambassador became the norm. Now, if I say systems of international diplomatic rank, interesting, it doesn't matter which foreign mission you take in South Africa or which South African mission abroad. They are all structured, the offices, exactly the same way. At the head of the mission, you will either have an ambassador or a high commissioner. Then the next rank, if it's a very big mission, will be a minister plenipotentiary. That will be like a deputy ambassador. Then the rank after that will be a counselor. And in terms of the counselors, we find political counselors, which are normally from the Department of International Relations, trade counselors from DTI, especially if it's in a country where we have a lot of trade, we will have a counselor as the highest official there. Then you will also get your mission administration person, which will be the corporate manager. That person will be at the level of a counselor. Then we will also find the first, second, and third secretaries, the attached departments, for example, the military attachés, home affairs attachés, etc., and the locally recruited personnel. So it's interesting to note, it doesn't matter which mission you look at, they are all structured exactly the same way. And this started with this first Vienna Congress of 1815. Now, all major powers in European states were exchanging ambassadors, and by 1487, it became the norm. By 1500, permanent missions became the standard. And you would find in those days that an embassy, for example, in Rome, had a staff component of 100 people or more. Now, today, if you look at the rand dollar, the rand euro pound exchange rate, you will understand that we have to keep our missions small. And most of the people working in a mission have to be multitask. When they are trained at the Department of International Relations for an intensive period of 6 months or a year, they are trained to manage tourism, trade, economic relations. So when we send out our diplomats, it is a very well-rounded person that we actually send out, because they must be able to multitask. Now, then we had what was called the Golden Age of Diplomacy, which began with the Peace of Westphalia in 1648. Permanent foreign ministries became the norm. And what I really want to get to in terms of our history is the Vienna Convention of 1961 and the Diplomatic Vienna Convention on Consular Relations of 1963. We've just had a wonderful FIFA 2010 World Cup here in our country, and we're very proud to note that we really got a 9 out of 10 in terms of success, which is wonderful that we achieved that. And if what I used to say, because I did all the training for the FIFA World Cup in terms of state protocol related events, when I explained it to people who never worked with protocol, if you compare the game of diplomacy to the game of soccer, the FIFA rulebook can be compared to these two Vienna conventions. It actually governs how we practice diplomacy, how we practice protocol, and how we relate to sovereign states, how we relate with each other. So this is basically, the Vienna Conventions can be considered the Bible of diplomacy. The Vienna Conventions, I'm not going to go through it today, there's not enough time, and I'm sure being from the portfolio committee that you are, you must have read about it. Very easy to find on any search engine. You just type in Vienna Convention, for example Google, and it will give you these conventions. It's a very thin document, easy to print out, and it makes for interesting reading to go through it. Now, if you were not very proud of the country before, today I'm going to make you proudly South African as well. Just some interesting facts for you. South Africa currently has diplomatic relations in 186 countries. Did you realize how many countries we have diplomatic relations with? That's a lot of countries. Mm-hmm. And it's through our 124 missions. And if I say mission, it can be an embassy or a high commission or a consulate general, or it can also be an international organization. For example, at the UN, we are represented by a fully fledged embassy and an ambassador. figures don't correlate, because in some countries we have an embassy, for example, at the Ivory Coast, where countries around it are also cared for by that singular embassy. For example, Sierra Leone is accredited through our embassy in Abidjan, etc. And remember I told you it's a very expensive thing operating a foreign mission, and that is why the 124 missions look after 186 countries. Now, inside Pretoria currently, as I'm speaking, we have 124 foreign missions operating. And next to cities like Washington, Paris, and Rome, Pretoria is currently one of the cities in the world with the largest foreign diplomatic representation. So not very bad for 15 years. I think we can be proudly South African, you will agree. Some of those missions, and in fact most of them, because we have this interesting system of government, also have satellite missions, consulates, here in Cape Town. And some of them, for example, the People's Republic of China, have more than just one satellite mission. They have a satellite mission in Johannesburg. They have Cape Town, they've got Durban, they've got Port Elizabeth. They're currently trying to open one in Bloemfontein. So you will find there's a lot of foreign diplomats present in our country. Very interesting, these figures. That, incidentally, is a photograph of our Minister of International Relations addressing the UN Security Council. Now let's look at a definition of an ambassador or a high commissioner. And some of the things that I might be talking about, please pardon me, it might be things that you already know. So please pardon me if I'm mentioning things that you already know or are aware of. The difference between an ambassador and a high commissioner, let's just briefly look at that. They are the same rank, equally important. But countries belonging to the Commonwealth, they call their ambassador a high commissioner, and their mission will be called a high commission. Otherwise, there's virtually no difference in importance. The only thing, in South Africa, once you've been an ambassador or a high commissioner abroad, after the term of duty has finished and you return back home, you are entitled to keep the title. But normally, we revert to the title of ambassador. So, for instance, you were the High Commissioner in Canada or the United Kingdom. When you come back home after your term of duty has finished, you can retain the title ambassador. It has no special privileges, doesn't come with anything special, but it's a title, it's an honorable title to retain. So they revert to being called ambassadors there. Now, it's a diplomatic official heading his or her country to permanent organizations, for example, at the UN. It's nothing else but an authorized messenger or a representative. It actually comes from the Middle Ages, where in those days, one country would send a messenger to another country with a specific message, and they had to travel over vast distances, and in those days, it was actually very dangerous to be a messenger or a diplomat. And in order to protect the diplomat, they started with this immunities and privileges, not to harm them. And I said it was very dangerous in those days, just to tell you a short story here. You know, in those days, if the king to whom you took a message didn't really like your message, for example, in the times of the Roman Empire, you could have yourself beheaded. And the Caesar then would send your head back in a basket to that kingdom saying, we actually didn't like the message that you brought. And it's actually from those days that we get the saying, please, I'm only the messenger, don't kill the messenger. Luckily, as I say, immunities and privileges were instituted, and that is why we protect the diplomat to enable enable them to perform their duties. Now, they are there to implement South Africa's foreign policy in the countries of accreditation. They must advance South Africa's national interests and values through bilateral and multilateral diplomatic relations. And this is an important point. They represent the president, the government, and the people of South Africa. Yeah. Now, something interesting. When we speak to the foreign diplomats, the heads of the diplomatic missions, the ambassadors and the high commissioners, when we address them, we call them Your Excellency. Why? Have you ever thought why? Because in terms of protocol, everything has a specific reason. When we address a foreign head of state, we also use the term Your Excellency. And remember, these ambassadors and high commissioners are the embodiment of their heads of state in our country. And that is the reason why we address them as Your Excellency. They directly represent their heads of state. When our ambassadors and high commissioners go abroad, they're also addressed as Your Excellency abroad, because they're representing our head of state abroad. But inside our country, we simply address them as ambassador or high commissioner, because they cannot represent the president inside the country. So that's that. So in future, if you meet a South African ambassador or high commissioner, you can simply address them as either ambassador or high commissioner. We said that they must manage the mission, and interesting, they also get audited on a yearly basis. And what's interesting, if the mission is not managed correctly, that can also be recalled. So a very large responsibility goes with these ambassadors and high commissioners. They promote bilateral and multilateral relations, interesting, trade, investment, and tourism. And the current figure that I have from the Department of Tourism is that for every 9 tourists that currently visits our country, it creates 1 permanent job in the tourism industry. So tourism, promoting tourism, forms a very important part of the work in any foreign mission. Then they must ensure that the mission provides consular services. If I say consular services, the consular people, they are the people that issue the visas in the foreign countries. They are also your port of help. Because if you're out there in a foreign country and you lose your passport and your money and your flight ticket, it's very important to contact the consulate. Because they will assist you in trying to reinstitute your flight ticket. And what do we do when we lose everything? The first thing comes to mind, I want to phone home. How can you phone home if you don't have money? So a consulate is a very important function. They contact home for you, try and get money for you from home, and they become extremely important if our people end up in trouble overseas. In trouble, I mean jails, etc. They visit the people in jails, make sure that they get humanely treated, get letters from there for them from home. And actually, in most of the countries, South African missions that I've visited, when I spoke to the consular people, they work extremely hard, taking care of our citizens abroad as well. Then they also monitor international development, and they advise government on foreign policy options, and they align with domestic priorities. Now, South African foreign policy, this is not a lecture on the foreign policy. We have experts at the department, and you are also the experts on the foreign policy, so I'm not going to lecture the experts on their field of expertise this morning, but I just want to briefly touch base on a few things here. First of all, it's informed by our domestic policy, and it's guided by the vision, a better South Africa in a better Africa and a better world. In other words, a better life for all. South Africa's international relations, and interactions and foreign policy priorities is guided by our national interest, and particularly the five foreign domestic priorities: education, health, land reform and rural development, fight against crime, as well as creating decent work opportunities for everybody. Now, our basic philosophy in terms of our domestic policy and our foreign policy, first of all these things are basically interactive. If you look at, first of all, the department on the left, first of all, you find the individual. And the individual is also a public servant. And the public servant becomes a diplomat. Now, the diplomat presents South Africa, and South Africa functions within Africa. Africa, the continent Africa, is in the world. And what we present, furthermore, what's very important to us in terms of our own country, is how we function with our neighboring countries, SADC, SACU, the African Union, the United Nations. So all these things are actually interrelated. That is what I want to get to. And if we look at our foreign policy priorities very briefly, we've got nine foreign policy priorities. First of all, as I said, our continued prioritization of the African continent, that's NEPAD, the AU, etc. Then the strengthening of political and economic integration of SADC and SACU. The strengthening of South-South relations. Here we think of IPSA, all our relations with the developing countries in the Southern Hemisphere. Our strengthening of relations with formations of the North, United States, Europe, etc. The strengthening of political and economic relations. How we function in the global system of governments. Our organizational support, the professional services we render, and our organizational strengthening. Now, this all actually has to do with the diplomat, presenting South Africa out there in the context of the world. Now, let's look at how an ambassador gets appointed. This is interesting. First of all, it's by the president. It's a very, very high appointment. And there's a difference between political and professional diplomats. They are equally important. First of all, there's just two strings on how you can become an ambassador. First of all, a professional diplomat will be somebody like myself, earnest people that enter the department at the entry level, go through the different ranks. And one day when we become directors, we've had diplomatic training, we've presented the country abroad for a few times, our minister can suggest to our head of state, Mr. President, I think it's time that we take Mr. Kahopa abroad as our ambassador in a specific country. Parliament. good experience there. The other way would be a political appointee. And currently, in terms of our constitution, and I think there's not many countries in the world that actually can say that they are so democratic, that the leader of an opposition party can represent the president, the people, and the government of this country. I'm specifically mentioning here Mr. Tony Leon, who's currently our ambassador in the Argentine. And another example will be Mr. Douglas Gibson, who is currently the ambassador in Thailand. Mr. Ben Ngobani. I know Mr. Rasool has just been given, he's just delivered his letters of credence in Washington, etc. Whatever place they come from, what is important here is that they are trained at head office and intensive training for at least 4 months before they can depart being the South African ambassador abroad. Now, interesting, there must be agreement from the host government. And they don't have to agree. They can actually say no if they don't want to. But it very, very seldom happens. It doesn't happen often. They actually don't have to give a reason. An example will be, for instance, in the history of diplomacy, there was an ambassador that was going to be sent from Israel to the UK. And the UK didn't want to accept that specific person because he formed part of a group of people that blew up an hotel and some citizens were killed, and then the UK refused. But they've got a very interesting way of refusing. You know, the world of diplomacy is very interesting. They don't come out straight and they don't have to give a reason. But from the department side, from protocol, when we go through and we ask, we're waiting for agreement, because you can't actually send the person out before agreement hasn't been given. Then they say, yes, we are, we know you're waiting, we are considering, it's in the process. A week later you ask again, they say it's still being processed. A month later it's still, 3 months later you realize it will never go beyond being still processed. And then we actually realize and we go back and we say, would you prefer that we relocate this ambassador? Yes, maybe that would not be a bad idea. You see, so they don't come out straight to you and say, this is not acceptable, unless they want to send out the message in that way. But as I say, it very, very seldom happens. Now, then there's a media announcement to say so-and-so is going out as South Africa's new ambassador. But what is very important, that before this trained ambassador, and if I say ambassador, I also mean High Commissioner, actually leaves the country, they must be given a letter of credence. It's a very beautiful document written in this archaic form of English, which states that the president has full confidence in this person and he believes that he will be able to perform his task very well, and he asks that this person must be accepted as the South African ambassador in that country. It gets the seal of the president and he signs it himself. Now, why do I say this letter is important? Once this ambassador reaches his country of destination, he must actually present that letter to the ceremonial head of state of that country where he will be the ambassador. And in most of the countries in the world, including South Africa, the exact minute and date that they present those credentials actually determines where they slot into the foreign diplomatic ranking order. For example, in South Africa, the longest serving ambassador or high commissioner automatically becomes the dean of the foreign diplomatic corps. Our dean is currently Ambassador Al Zubaydi of Libya. He's been here for 13 years. He's the longest serving ambassador. And Libya does have the same system that South Africa has of 5 years. We cannot prescribe to another country how long they should keep their ambassadors. So until Ambassador Al Zubaydi goes home, he will remain the dean of the foreign diplomatic corps because he's the longest serving ambassador. So that actually determines the ranking order amongst the ambassadors and high commissioners. And it's interesting, like in any organization, within the foreign diplomatic corps, you also find different groupings. For example, the African ambassadors, they form a grouping inside and they have an African dean which they select. Then you will have the Middle Eastern bloc and the European bloc, etc. But the main dean is Ambassador Al Zubaydi. There's another system in the world as well. As you know, the Pope also sends out his ambassadors, the Pope of the Roman Catholic Church, because he is considered the head of state and he also has a piece of country, the Holy See, the Vatican. Now, the Pope's ambassadors are called nuncios, N-U-N-C-I-O. And in countries with a very strong Roman Catholic history, The nuncio is automatically the dean. It will be countries like Italy, Spain, Portugal. Interestingly enough, I would have thought Latin America also adheres to this. But Argentine and Brazil prefers the longer-serving ambassador system, like we do. Very interesting. Yes, we have a nuncio. Yeah, it's a nuncio. But he can't become the dean because with us it's the longest-serving ambassador in the diplomatic ranking order. Now, that is just a picture of the new High Commissioner of India presenting his credentials to our president. Pardon? He's representing India. Oh, I mean, I don't think he can be anything else coming from India. Okay. As you can see, in South Africa, we also make a beautiful ceremony out of it. It's done at the Presidential Guest House. We have a ceremonial guard of honor welcoming them. They are accompanied by the spouses, and they present directly to our head of state. The diplomatic corps gets invited, yes. So it's a very grand function, and it is people dress up, and it, you know, in some countries, for example, they make very, very much out of it in the diplomatic world. For example, in London, you get to ride in one of those golden horse-driven carriages, and you go to Buckingham Palace and you present to the Queen, because the Queen is the head of state there. Mm-hmm. So it's in. Yes, we wait till it's quite a number, yes. Not one at a time, no. We do quite a few together because otherwise we will be having too many functions, you know. So we wait till there's, and it's interesting. So for instance, India presented 1 minute before Malaysia. In the ranking order, they're ahead of Malaysia. So you get that the different diplomatic missions, the moment that they hear, you know, the new ambassador is en route here, they come to us and say, when are we presenting, when are we presenting? Because it determines their ranking order. So you find they're very eager to come forward and say, we need to present, when is the next date, you know. We don't have a battle in getting them together. They're very eager to come and present because it determines their ranking order. But it's the exact minute and date. No, it's as they apply, yes. Yeah. So if we don't have a battle to get them to come forward and present, that's what I want to get to. Okay. Now, the protocol family, we say the protocol family must be translators of their country's realities. In those slides that I showed you that says that we interrelated, everybody in South Africa is actually part of this protocol family. We don't have to wait to become diplomats. We represent our country. What's important? Be near to your country, know your country, be near to your people, true and plausible, and explain intelligently your responsibilities. And we always say, good protocol people find new solutions to old problems, better solutions to tricky problems, and great solutions to great problems. And in the world of protocol, we can't say it's challenges, not problems. We only see it as challenges. Now, I think we can give a brief body break here because I've spoken for nearly an hour already. So I'm going to give you 5 minutes. Will that be in order? Just to stretch your legs for a bit. Yes, you will. No. People can raise issues as we go along. It's interesting because it makes for interesting discussion. You don't have to wait till the end of the presentation.
Yeah, we know what is dividing coke now. We know what is dividing coke. Nah. DJ. Yeah, we know. Now, the age behind it.
I like what we're hearing. What
is the name
Convention on Diplomatic Relations of 1961 and the Vienna Convention on Consular Relations of 1963. Now, we basically asked the question, what is meant by protocol and what is etiquette? Protocol is the correct behavior by a state, then we have state protocol, or by an organization or an institution. Inside every organization, there's a protocol also, a way of doing things, rules, regulations, how we relate. Etiquette is your personal behavior. And it's actually taught to you from the moment that you master speech. Just want to ask how many of the colleagues here have children? All of us have children. Yeah. So you are all etiquette trainers. You never think about it, but you are etiquette trainers. Etiquette is your personal behavior. It comes with you as you grow up. Mm. And protocol is the organizational. And when it comes to sovereign, independent states relating, it's called state protocol. Now, the word protocol is an interesting word. It comes from the Greek. And remember I said, it was first practiced in Greece, before Christ already, and it actually means first glue. Why? In those ancient times, a book didn't look like the books we have now. It was a scroll. And when they wanted to find out what was written in a specific scroll, they had to unroll this whole long thing to find out, is this what we're looking for? So they decided, let's paste an index in front so that we don't have to unroll this whole thing. and the glue that they used to paste the index in, to say what it contains, how does it relate, was called the protocol. So protocol is the glue that keeps international relations together. The colleague over there just mentioned that he knows Ambassador Billy Modisi. He was one of my previous chiefs of protocol and somebody that I really looked up to, that really taught me a lot of protocol. And he used to describe it very well. He always said, international relations between two independent sovereign states, you can compare it to two pieces of well-toasted bread. If you put them together, they grind, they don't stick. But if you put the protocol, the butter and the jam, it makes a nice sandwich. It sticks together. So it regulates how we relate. It gives the rules so that we work from the same page, that we basically understand each other. And South Africa's protocol, the protocol that we developed since 94, is a very modern international protocol. It relates very much to international protocol. So we don't really have to adapt when we have foreign countries coming to visit us. It's very much in line with international protocol. And what makes our country wonderful in terms of protocol, if you have to train a protocol officer, everything is in this country because we have all the cultures, all the population groups. In contrast to a country, for example, China, where most people just speak Mandarin. They don't speak a lot of English in China. And they have not that many, they have cultures, yes, but it's all Chinese cultures. In South Africa, we've got the whole world already. So it makes for a very good basic training field for any person in the protocol region. And what I want to mention here also, it focuses on a logistical environment within which diplomacy is practiced. An environment which is conducive to a successful event or function, taking into consideration all dynamics. You cannot just practice protocol directly, the same with every event. You have to look at what country you are dealing with, the culture, the religious, the social setup comes into practice here. For example, if you have a country from a very strict religious Muslim country coming to South Africa, we will have to be very careful in certain aspects when we have a bilateral event. For example, in terms of their religion, it's against the religion for a person of opposite sexes. Don't exchange greetings by touching. A woman's husband, her brother, her sons and father is allowed to touch her. So if you are going out there now to welcome the first lady of, let's say, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and you are not aware of it, remember South Africans, we are this very, I always classify us as warm, friendly, huggy, nice people, you know. So we come with the outstretched hand and we nearly, you know, we want to give that hug. We must be very careful because this person is going to jump back and simply do this. They're not going to take that outstretched hand. And it can be an extreme embarrassment. I've seen this actually happening, and this was a real case scenario, when this person came to South Africa, where a premier wasn't coached by protocol, because remember, it's protocol's duty to tell people, remember, she is from the Islamic religion, strict Islamic. We must respect the religion. As a person from the opposite sex, you cannot extend your hand in welcoming her to the country. And I'm quoting the extreme example here. So that is something we must take into consideration. And also what I want to share with you, when we welcomed them, We had a beautiful room in the hotel, ready to welcome them. Flowers, chocolates, fruit, everything. It looked so beautiful. And the ambassador said, no, but the room is not correct. And I thought, how can the room not be correct? Maybe it's facing the wrong way. And I said, but I don't understand, ambassador. And he said, there's alcohol in the mini bar. You have to remove it. So there are certain things that we have to take into consideration. When you have a bilateral event with a country like that, you cannot take out the terrific Cape wines and say, marketing opportunity for our beautiful wines. We have to market cereals, liquid fruit, things like that. So that is something we need to take into consideration. When we have a multicultural event, what do we do then? Because, I mean, this is South Africa. This is our country. We drink wine. We market wines and things like that. What we do then, we will have certain tables at that event. For example, the lunch at the inauguration. We will instruct waiters to say that the people at these tables that will be seated here are from a strict religion. They, for example, only eat halal prepared food, or they just eat kosher food, and we will make sure that they are accommodated like that. Because remember, in South Africa, we cater for everybody. We don't just say unilaterally, this is South Africa, either you do it or you don't come. We welcome everybody, and we make sure that those guests are also received. But at a multicultural event, I mean, we will definitely put our best wines forward. And something that I also want to mention here in terms of South African protocol, which is important. Yes, we can cook like the French. I think we've got wonderful restaurants in this country. Excellent French cooking. But when we have a state banquet, when we have a lunch putting South Africa on the map as a country, we all have in this country a fantastic culinary history. Let's market our own food as well. And very important, no French or Portuguese or Spanish wines. It must be South African. That is something that we must brand and market this country, because it's an opportunity and we have the product. So we mustn't try and serve, sell the French. We can serve better French food than they can ever dream up. We know we can make it, but we must produce the South African culinary product. Something that we must keep in mind. As I mentioned, it takes political, social, cultural, and religious sensitivity. That's the main thing about protocol. If anybody asks me, what is protocol really about? It's about being sensitive, in accepting another person's values, his culture, his social setup, etc., in not judging, in being sensitive. That is really what protocol is about. And I think as South Africans, we really make the grade, because we make room for everybody. Now, state protocol, Branch State Protocol at the Department of International Relations includes state and official visits. That's a directorate dealing with the visits. Then there's a directorate protocol, ceremonial, and guest houses. They deal with the ceremonies, the invitations, the guest houses, the flags, etc. And incidentally, they also have a fantastic flag bank. And we make sure that if any other government department has a summit, they can obtain these flags for the period of that summit free of charge from our department, and we also make sure that they display the flags correctly. Then there is immunities and privileges. That is the directorate that governs the foreign diplomatic corps in our country. Remember I told you how big that diplomatic corps is? So this department really has a lot of work. Then there is state and protocol lounges. We've got protocol lounges, Oliver Tambo, Cape Town International, as well as King Shaka International. So they make sure everything there takes place correctly. Then we also have intergovernmental and provincial protocol. Because what is important, the way we practice protocol at national level, at parliamentary level, it's also important that at provincial level, at municipal level, the protocol remains exactly the same. So that when a guest visits South Africa, when he meets the head of state, and as he goes through the different levels of government, the protocol is the same thing, that it doesn't differ, that it must be uniquely and internationally South African. Of course, there's the Intergovernmental and Provincial Protocol, as I mentioned, and we also have the International Conference section. At our new building, we're very proud, there's a beautiful conference section. It can actually host between 250 and 300 people, and its setup can be changed. It's a wonderful place for a conference. I've been able to work there once or twice now already, and it was really a fantastic opportunity to be able to see. At long last, we have a type of conference hall like that. Pardon? You saw it. It's beautiful. Yeah. It's really absolutely fantastic to host these events. Okay. Now, the aim of protocol is not to glorify anybody, to make anybody feel important, but it is there to establish order. That's why we have protocol. Now, we say the first phase concerns the presidents of countries. If ever we have an international event, what comes to mind is how are we going to seat people? Now, in South Africa, we use the English alphabet normally. But there's other systems that we can also use. In some other countries, they use the French alphabet. Because under the French alphabet, for example, United States of America will be under E and not under U. South Africa will be a fleet deceit, so it changes, not South Africa under S. As I mentioned, in South Africa we use the English alphabet, but we also use other systems, because during the inauguration last year, we had a very interesting system. We said, let's look at our foreign policy when we do the seating. And we decided, okay, SADC. We're a SADC country. So we're going to seat the SADC country's heads of state first in terms of who has been longest in office. So that will explain to you why President Mugabe had such a good seat. Because people couldn't understand, but that's, if you look at SADC. Yeah. I think the Portfolio Committee can recommend that next time. Yeah. Okay, then after that we said, okay, but we are part of the African continent, AU. So we use the AU countries then. And only after that we place the rest of the world. So even then, if President Obama was going to attend, he wouldn't have had the prime seat. He would have had to come after the AU countries. Because that's the system we imply. Okay, but that makes sense. Alphabetical order sometimes. But what if it's a recurring event? If it's international and it's a recurring event, you can't just use the alphabet, because that means everybody's going to have the same seat always. For example, the UN General Assembly. Then a country like Algeria will be here in the prime seat, you know, catching the eye of the Secretary General. And what about Zambia and Zimbabwe and Venezuela? You know, and even South Africa, we went to the back then. So what they do at the UN, every second year they have a draw. And so, for instance, a country like Portugal wins the draw. They start the alphabet for 2 years, commencing with B. That's how they do it there. And, of course, as I said, they use the French alphabet. They don't use the English alphabet for some reason or other. Okay. So there's different systems. Whatever is important, if we place people, we must just have a system and know what our system is. Now, the second phase we said concerns the seniority of envoys, because it doesn't matter to which organization you belong in the world. In everything, there is always a ranking order. And we've just discussed how we rank the foreign heads of the diplomatic missions in South Africa. Our ministers, it's in terms of our new constitution, the moment that a minister is sworn in for the first time, it determines their ranking order. The same as with the deputy ministers. Currently, Minister Khadebe is the most senior minister. But when we discuss the order of precedence, there's a few exceptions. And that is where the Department of International Relations and Cooperation's line function manager, our minister, comes into play. When the function we're hosting is about international relations, our minister takes the precedence. Our minister then takes the precedence. And this brings me to the basic principle of protocol in South Africa. State protocol in South Africa is very simple, very easy to understand. Longer serving in terms of the new constitution. So he's currently our most senior minister, that's currently still a minister. She's just after him. Yeah. But he's been longer in office than Minister Dlamini Zuma. That's why he's sometimes asking to act. Yeah, he's the most senior. Now, our basic principle rule says the most important object or person is always to the left of the spectator. If more than two, the focus changes to the middle, and then we use the rule left, right, left, right. We always take it from the spectator's point of view. If we had to place the South African flag in this room this morning, there will only be one place. To the left of the spectator. So we take it from your point of view, it will be in that corner. If there was a foreign country present here as well, the foreign country's flag will go that side. So South Africa, foreign country. But what if we have India, Brazil, South Africa talks today, and we have to place those three country flags here in front of you? Because we're on South African soil, we then start with the South African flag in the middle. Then Brazil goes to your left, because that's alphabetical, and India to your right. Okay. But what if we were receiving 96 countries here? And we had to place those flags outside of the door. We're on South African soil. So as we approach the room, the first flag must be South Africa to our left. And then we will place the rest of the 95 flags alphabetically as we walk towards the room. The moment it becomes too much, we use that principle. So we've got the two systems. But say for instance, it's seven countries. We start with South Africa in the middle, then B, C, D, E, F, G. But if it becomes too many, then we can say South Africa and the rest alphabetical. That's the two systems. And we see this rule being used quite often abroad in other countries. The members of the South African soil, it also implies in our missions and our residences abroad. That's considered South African soil. But the moment we are on another country's territory, then we have to respect and go according to their protocol.
Do you update your flag, talk about other countries in the region? For example, the
Yes, we update. What I normally do, sir, sometimes even if the president of Malawi is going to come to South Africa, there will always be an advanced protocol team. Then it's our duty to make sure that we know what the flag is, that it is correct. And what we as South Africans also do when we go abroad as an advanced team, we take a standard, a ceremonial flag, we take a table flag, we take a call flag with, to make sure that we have the correct flag. It's in terms of our protocol. We only put the flag if it's the head of state. If it's the head of state, we put the flag. Remember, when our ambassador drives the official car abroad, he's representing the president. That's why he has the flag on the car. If he sends one of the mission people on his behalf to represent the president, the government, and the people of South Africa, that person can then drive in the official car with the flag. In terms of FIFA, look how many of us have flags on the car. It's only actually a head of state that should be flying the flag. Yeah. He doesn't put the flag on the car. You know, sometimes it can also be a security issue that they don't always put the flag. Yeah. And but if it's an official ceremony, they put the flag. And you will find very often a head of state when he arrives, if the flag is not in the car, they will not get into that car. Yeah. But some heads of state, when they come, the country is on a very high security list. And then you would be very careful of placing the flag because you're identifying the head of state there. Yeah, Gaddafi doesn't. He also, you have to hire 3 cars, and you don't know which car he's going to get at the last minute. He decides himself. Okay, but if we continue, this is the golden rule of protocol. This is our deputy president receiving a counterpart in front of the union buildings. Now, if you think about the rule of protocol, he puts his important visitor on his right to our left. So that is why if I was seated here with an important visitor in front of you today, the important person will be on my right to your left. If I'm walking with the president somewhere, I place the president on my right. So that anybody who sees us coming towards them, if I come towards you with the president, is to your left. So that is the basic rule of protocol. Here you can see he's walking with his visitor in the union buildings. He places him on his right, to our left. Yes, I put it there. I think that should add the other language, official languages, quite frankly. I haven't got round to that, but I think it would be proper. I agree with you, sir. Yeah. Okay, it would actually look very nice. It should be like it. Especially the place. That is something that you, as a committee, can... I should put it alphabetical. Then it solves the problem. Otherwise, we're going to argue this for so long that we'll never place the names. Yeah.
All of
them, practically, yeah.
Special envoy.
It's on his behalf. It carries the title of special envoy, and the special envoy, envoy comes from the French word meaning envoi, messenger, ambassador, special ambassador. Carries the title of special ambassador, and he will have special privileges as the president sent him. He's the representative of the head of state. Yeah, the immunities and privileges only comes in working if you're accredited in a specific country. For instance, a diplomatic passport doesn't give you immunities and privileges. It only gives you immunities and privileges in the country that you are accredited to, that you are working in. For example, if we have the Russian ambassador in Bogota, Botswana, or in, say, Namibia, in Namibia, he only has immunities and privileges in Namibia. If he comes to South Africa on holiday, he's like a normal tourist. He has no immunities and privileges here. It's only when you are registered, accredited. But if the president sends you as a special envoy, you have been elevated as a special envoy, as a special ambassador. You're representing the head of state. So it goes with a, you will be received extremely well in the foreign country. You will probably go through the state protocol lounge, being received by the protocol, etc. Now, this is just an example of a general setup. Unfortunately, I couldn't turn it around, so it's a bit difficult to see, but I'm going to show you the real setup if we receive a head of state. Now, remember I said the South African president will put the important visitor on his right. We put the South African flag to the left of the spectator, and that is why the visitor sits in front of the South African flag. It's like giving your favorite seat to a visitor at your home. That's basically what we mean with our protocol. If we look at this, this is the president of Congo Brazzaville visiting South Africa. And you can see the South African flag is to the left. The president of Congo Brazzaville is to our left, the two most important things. Our president is the host. He's seated in front of the South African flag. And the small table flags we use to indicate to them what is their seat, exactly where they should be seated. So you can actually see the flags crossing. We sometimes have problems with this. I distinctly remember when President Sarkozy visited. He did not want to stand in front of the South African flag, and it was actually not good protocol. I can see it said in this meeting, because he's on host country soil. You will find that in some countries it's slightly different. But if you're in a host country as a visitor, you must go according to the protocol. We give the place of honor to the South African flag because it's on our soil. We give the place of honor to the visitor, and that's why he ends up in front of the flag. That's basically the rule. Okay, suppose this issue. You know, when the protocol, it was actually an argument that lasted 3 hours. The meeting, and it wasn't really resolved, and then the real meeting was going to take place, and just before the meeting took place, we stood up, we placed the flags correctly, the president walked in. President Sarkozy was standing in front of the South African flag. because this is South African protocol. And I mean, we should use it like this in our own country. Yes, when we are on visitor soil, then we don't, can't implement it like that. But no, we can't remember, nothing is cast in iron. It can change. But it will mean we have to redevise all our rules. The Chief of State Protocol, he is normally the head of the Branch State Protocol. It's a DDD position. But he is appointed through cabinet. It must be somebody with former protocol experience, somebody who used to be head of a mission, for normally they have an ambassador or a high commissioner rank. And then through that person, they discuss how protocol rules should be. But it can change. For example, the national symbols, all our national symbols, the president is the fount of honor. He's the keeper of the symbols. It can change, but it must be discussed at cabinet level then. So it's not, no, there's no such thing that it cannot change. But that is how we decided upon it, and we implement it until any further decisions. Marcus. We haven't appointed somebody new yet, no. There's somebody acting, yes, sir. It's Ms. Nonseba Lawsi. She used to be the Deputy Chief of State Protocol. She's now acting. No, she's not. She's not. She's Chief Director level, and she's appointed as acting. We have a register. Protocol ceremonial have a register of head of state in order of longest serving in alphabetical order. They have they keep register of all these things. Titles, how do you address a person correctly? And remember, when you're out there in a foreign country, you are actually VIP visitors. You are excellencies. It's like our head of state. Our head of state inside our country is addressed as Mr. President. But when he leaves the country and he's abroad, he's a foreign president, they address him as Your Excellency. When our head of state receives foreign heads of state here, remember, now they are addressed as Your Excellency in our country. But our president is at the same level. Then we also address him as Your Excellency. So in the presence of other heads of state, he must also be addressed as Your Excellency. I always remember like that, you can't address a foreigner as Your Excellency and not our own president. He's equally important, if not more to us. Then in the presence of other heads of state in our own country, we also address him as Your Excellency. Yeah, remember in Parliament, Parliament is a different environment. Remember I said there's parliamentary protocol. And in parliamentary protocol, they use the term the Honourable. Because in Parliament is a different environment. It comes from the Westminster parliamentary system that we adopted. And it's a different environment inside here. Then we must adhere to parliamentary protocol. You've got a Chief Director Parliamentary Protocol also, and he will know the rules of Parliamentary Protocol. So it goes about the environment that you are in. One cannot just use protocol, this is a rule, this is how we use it. You always have to look at environment, I mean. Yes. Okay. at the national symbol, if we can briefly just go through the thing. Okay, like any other country, we have a coat of arms, a national flag, a national anthem. Then others will include the national animal, bird, fish, flower, and tree. Now, our national bird is the blue crane. You can see it there to your left. Then the King Protea is the national flower. The real yellow wood is the national tree. The springbok is the animal, and the fish is the hollyhock. Type three. That's the other symbol. It's just a usage amongst countries to have that as well. We can eat the national fish, but we cannot dine on the national flag. Okay, the national coat of arms. Very briefly, is it necessary for me to go through the symbolism behind it? You want to go through it? Okay. I think it's one of the most beautiful coats of arms in the world. It was decided upon through a national competition, and the Bureau of Heraldry took the winning designs, they combined it, and they came up with this design. Remember, the president is the fount of honor. He signs off on the national symbols. It doesn't mean it cannot be changed, but we must use it. And if it needs to be changed, it goes through Parliament, it goes through Cabinet, and then he has to sign it off again. If we just briefly go through the symbolism, at the bottom of this coat of arms, you have a motto in the Hom language of the Khoisan people. They chose that because it's our common ancestors. And it says, diverse people unite. Then if you look at the coat of arms, you can basically see it has two elliptical, it's got an elliptical form, because that stands for infinity and eternity. To the side, you have the elephant tusks, symbolizing wisdom and strength of the people. Then in the inside is the ears of wheat, the germination, the prosperity of our country. Then you also see the shield, protection, the sanctity, the soul, integrity of our nation. And on the shield, we also have the two Khoisan people, dancing figures, clasping hands in friendship. This was taken from the Linton Stone, a Bushman painting, that is here at the museum in Cape Town. They took it out of the cave and they keep it here. Then on top of the shield, Bushman, yes.
Men,
both men, yeah. Yeah, well, in this instance, you know, if we take back our ancestors in those days, women didn't have rights. So thank heavens it's changed as we progress now. Yeah. Put a woman as well. Yeah. Okay, then the bird that they've taken there is the secretary bird. They didn't take the blue crane. You could see in the previous picture, the blue crane is a rather docile, scared creature. The secretary bird is very strong. It will protect its territory and its young up to a point of death. That's why they chose this bird. And it's depicted with its wings outstretched, flying forward, going up, going strong. Then the body of the secretary bird is represented by two triangles representing our mineral wealth, our national flower, and it also represents the African Renaissance, the rebirth of Africa, this beautiful diamond shining there. And then the legs of the secretary bird is depicted by two traditional weapons, the knokkeri and the spear. And please note, they're placed in the peace position. We come in peace, they're placed down. So you can see, remember I said, our coat of arms ties in with what we say in terms of our foreign policy. Peaceful negotiation, conflict resolution. Not war. Now, interesting, this coat of arms must always be displayed on a white or cream background. If you want to use it on a different color of background, you need to get permission from the Bureau of Heraldry. Our yearbook this year, it was embossed in gold, displayed like that. They had to get permission. The files used by the presidency, it's displayed on black there. So it's not that you cannot display it on another color, but it must be done with permission. Please have a look at the, very often we use it on our business cards. Now, in terms of the business card, only the president can have his entire business card displayed in gold, embossed. That's the honor given to the head of state. The deputy president will have the wings of the bird and the shield embossed in gold. Ministers will have the tips of the wings and the shield, same as ambassadors. And people like me have it in full color, no gold nowhere. But it's interesting, if I look at my business card, it's to the left of the spectator also. So this rule, the more you look at protocol, the more you will see this thing of to the left of the spectator. Letterheads, it's to the left of the spectator. If it's displayed with, say, for instance, a company like Eskom, which also has a branding, the national one goes to the left, and as Eskom will put their brand on the right. So the rule takes precedence again. Oh, and the sun we left out. In front of our buildings, yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, sir, unfortunately, my teaching doesn't go up to school level, but I have, unfortunately, I didn't bring it with. There's a beautiful new book, a workbook, that has been published by the Department of Education with the help of the Bureau of Heraldry. And it's got a whole workbook on these national symbols. So I think we need to teach the children, because it's something that should be taught at school level already, you know, at all our institutions. And I think there is a campaign, because I spoke to the chief of the Bureau the other day. They're going to have a conference where they're going to discuss these things, and especially the fact that this needs to be implemented at school level already. Yeah. Yeah. They must know what they're caring about. This brings me to the national flag. Also a very beautiful flag. It was also decided through a national competition, and this is the final design that they actually came up. What is very important, the red must always be placed at the top. It was decided that that will be the top of the flag. If we place it upside down, it symbolizes that South Africa is in distress. It comes from maritime law. And if we see the flag being displayed upside down, we should correct it as good South Africans. We should also teach our young athletes, because the other day, only beginning of this year, there was a young South African athlete that won a gold medal somewhere. I can't remember the athlete. I just remember the flag being waved with the blue at the top. So we must train the athletic teams, the sportsmen, before they go out, please, in the use of these flags. Yeah. It was supposed to be an interim flag, and that's why they're going to have this conference on the national symbols somewhere in this year or the beginning of next year, where they're going to relook at these things. currently, as this is how the president signs it off, this is how I should train. When they decide otherwise, I will adapt my training definitely. Now, the South African flag is one of the flags with the most colors in the band, 6 colors. And what's interesting, the symbolism here is very interesting currently. It's an example of South Africa's commitment to non-discrimination. The colors were deliberately not given any symbolic meaning officially. We are free to make the colors personally meaningful as long as we remember to celebrate diversity and unity to cooperate for the good of all. I think in future they might give specific meanings because we all know that we attach specific meanings to the flag. And I think it would make it more easy for the children especially to understand. Yeah. Interesting. To conclude this discussion, the 6 colors of this flag can be found in the colors of every political party in South Africa. Everything. So from the extreme left to the extreme right, and represents the average color rendition. But I think this meaning, I know the meaning behind, you know, and it makes sense to me that say the red is for the blood of the martyrs, etc. It makes sense, but we will see what comes out from this decision and how it gets signed off eventually.
Yeah.
No, I don't see orange.
That's why
the A's in the story. The A's, you've got it.
Let's just say blue is more
sustainable. Okay. I just want to mention in terms of the positioning, we spoke on how we place the flag. What is very important, the South African flag, if it's flown outside of a building, it must be illuminated at night. It cannot hang there in the dark. Then we have to take it down at sunset. If we half-mast the flag, it's only on instruction of the head of state. We can't half-mast it if we feel like it. The instruction comes from Department of International Relations, at protocol ceremonial, and it's the presidency, the president himself, that gives the instruction to protocol ceremonial. This is just the different flag sizes. The storm flag is the flag that should be well known in the Cape as well, and it is actually used when the weather is bad because you don't want the flag to be torn to pieces by the wind or hanging dismally in the rain. What is important, and the chief of the Bureau of Heraldry mentioned to me they're going to give these rules and get a body to monitor how we use our national symbols. You cannot make a carpet out of the flag or use it as a tablecloth because it's disrespect. Or when I walk out here and I see, oh, it's raining, let me put the flag over my head. I don't want my hair to be destroyed by the rain. It's disrespect. It's a national symbol. It represents the country. Yeah. I think there's some players, you know, the only exception where they're sometimes allowed, if it's at a national sporting event, then you can put it on the caps and on the T-shirts and everybody fly it and paint it on the faces, etc. When it's like with FIFA. They were all wearing them. You know, we have those beautiful blankets. I mean, it's a special event. It's a special marketing thing. But in general day-to-day use, we should observe this. I just want to show you, if we use it vertically like that, the red goes to the left again. That was inside the Union Buildings on an award ceremony in the court there at the Union Building. And there you can see the coat of arms and both the flags being used. And please note, never mirror image. It's always the red to the left, the red to the left, or at the top.
No,
That was just showing you when Hillary Clinton visited South Africa, Senator Clinton. The flag is to your left here. It didn't come out on the picture there, but it's to the left. She didn't have a problem, incidentally. No, she didn't have a problem with that. That's the flags in alphabetical order in the front of our building during FIFA. We had our mascot. To your left is the South African host, with the flag. To the right of the mascot is the FIFA flag. And then we placed all the players in alphabetical order. And note, as a player, we are repeated again. That was the FIFA flag protocol we used there. In some countries it's like that. What we normally do, if we fire both flags, we take it from the spectator's point of view, the South African flag to the left and the company. If it's on the same flag staff on top of each other, of course the national flag goes to the top. The national anthem, the only thing I want to mention here, it's shortened already. If we use it, if we sing it, all four verses.
And what about the gesture?
The gesture, normally the president, the head of state, uses that gesture, but it's not reserved only for the head of state. If you feel very patriotic about the anthem and the country and you want to use it, you are welcome. Just remember, with hands to the sides on attention, not speaking on a cell phone. I really have to train the young people about that. Leave the cell phone alone. Yeah. And not with gentlemen hands in pockets, but to the side. Or you can place the hand on the heart. It's fine. The president always does it, but it can also be, he takes it from the military. Because remember, he is the head of all the combined armed forces as well. But if you as a South African want to stand like that, yes. Not this. This is for political rallies. Yeah. Remember, the environment again depicts. It's fine with a political rally, but if it's a ceremonial event receiving another country, then we can't have a political rally. Okay, it's used at state and official banquets, international sporting events, national day celebration, and state and official funerals. And there we have it. And I think we're going way past our tea time. I think I'll have to come back to Cape Town for another time. But if you want a 15-minute tea break, or maybe we should get our tea and then I can continue. Mm. Yeah, I think I'm going to give you a few minutes to get tea, colleagues, so that we can go through this basic program and finish it.
It's raining outside.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, it's raining. Okay,
good now.
What's the level? That's 12,
huh?
Anyway, I'm not alone. What's up? I used to be a loud smoker. Now I stopped. After smoking for almost 15 years.
Wow.
And I have more than 15 years that we stopped.
That's such an end to your life, thing.
What is that?
I think it's a new one.
I don't know. I should even hand out. Hard copies. Yeah. But I do remember I need to have some hard copies for the French when they're going out and you know, receiving. You know, this delegation from Sudan, they keep on coming back. This one's still in Parliament. Cool.
I have no idea. Don't know.
I'm falling apart now. Falling apart. They were going to very badly in the next election. Because of the infighting.
You would rather consider joining the
AA.
But you might not consider joining the AA.
Sometimes we change when we throw an outside next to the noise of the world, people are not here. While we have the tea break, I just want to mention this training and protocol for our young diplomats in the diplomatic training courses. We take extremely serious. Their training is normally 3 full days. And we have a sit-down banquet and everything because we want to send the people out there to represent South Africa on an international basis. We want very polished, well-rounded people. And it's very important, you know, you can have incredible knowledge. But the first thing when you're out there on the international playing field, they observe when you arrive is the image. And small things can kill your image. So we really go to a lot of trouble polishing our young diplomats. They write exams on protocol, they study the Vienna Conventions. They need 80% to pass the protocol, just to give them that confidence. Because if your image is incorrect, it's easier to bring across your message. That's how we see it. Not that image is everything, but it does help to get you past that first hurdle. Now, today we're not going to have time for the fine dining etiquette. If we have to do that, we need to have a banquet or a lunch or something like that. I can come for another day. But in terms of our fine dining etiquette, there is also a specific protocol that we adhere to in South Africa. And remember, I said it's very international. There are certain things that we do a bit differently to make our stuff our own branding, etc. And something I want to mention is tea drinking etiquette, because we all drink tea. Every meeting we drink tea. And there is actually a fine etiquette attached to tea drinking. So we all have cups and everything here, and I just want to briefly touch on it. Now, very important, if you're seated and you're drinking tea, you can leave the saucer on the table and just pick up the cup. But if I were going to stand around with people at a conference, then I need to have this. And it's a practical reason. Because if I'm talking and somebody bumps against me, there's a saucer to protect my outfit. So it's practical. Very important, and I think it's because we are this nature-loving, outdoor type of country. We should never do this. Because I see international visitors find it amusing. Now, we don't want to come across as amusing. We're not there for the amusement of other people. So, very important, this is actually dangerous. The spoon goes to the back, away from you, to the back.
How about drinking the spoon?
Never. Never blow on the tea. Never stir, because if we were 300 people stirring, it causes a lot of noise. So the spoon goes to the back. If I serve a cup of tea to a person, I turn it around so that the spoon is then to my side. And then I serve it. It's away from you. So that's just very briefly on the tea drinking etiquette. And something that I want to mention, and I said, you know, unfortunately, doing the job I do, I notice things all over, in aircraft, wherever. I love watching people. And I'm not criticizing, I'm just mentioning. But what's nice here, and I also notice it, always when you make yourself tea, there should always be a bowl where you put that used tea bag, sugar, papers, and things like that, because try and keep this clean. It's fine to put a biscuit or something small to the side. There's nothing wrong with that. But the tea bags and the things swimming around in the saucer, it doesn't look pretty, and you deserve better. No difference. No difference. You know, we all like to see the rough in the tea. That's how it's so South African. Continue. Yeah, and then if you're not drinking wine, he will He will remove the cloth. He removes the cloth if you're not having one. Okay. While we're on the eating, just a few pointers. You said, normally with the training, we really enjoy the sanctity thing when I teach the young people. They love it. And I think it's really necessary because it gives them that courage, that presence when they're out there in the international arena. When we arrive at the table, and this is especially for the ladies. Ladies, no cell phones, handbag, lipstick, notebook, anything on that beautiful table. Yeah. No. Your personal belongings shouldn't go onto the table. The serviette is not a scarf. The napkin is not a scarf. It goes on your lap. Very important. And then what else is there that I can briefly mention? Yeah, the soup, when we eat the soup, the spoon goes out. You scoop it out and away, back over the soup. Because if it's going to drip, it drips back into the soup. The toothpick should not be on the table at all anymore. In very nice restaurants and in our state banquets, we are removing the toothpick. They normally put the toothpick in the bathroom now. That's where it should be. Or that they give it to you with a bowl. But the toothpick, these noises that we... You know what's funny? It's normally at that stage when the toothpick starts being used that everybody is now bored and they actually want to get this thing finished and over, we want to go home. So they start sucking and making noises and playing with this toothpick. So that is something... Please don't use it if you can leave it. It should be used in the bowl.
Can I ask one?
You are welcome to ask questions.
I'll be honest. I always wanted to be sitting with
Pocket Knight.
And
wasn't so wrong. Okay, in a formal banquet, look.
I'm being honest.
Yeah. There is also eating with the hands. And it's actually a very fine etiquette that goes with eating with the hands. If you have, like in North Africa and lots of African countries, Middle Eastern countries, when they eat with the hand, only the right hand, not the left hand, please note if you're in one of those countries, they will put a beautiful little bowl with warm water and lemon juice that you rinse the tips of your fingers and they put, and they put a nice little napkin there for you to use with that. And then when you take food, eating with the hand, in this formal setup now, only up to your first knuckle is allowed to touch the food. Not any further, only the right hand, only these three fingers. And your fingers shouldn't touch your lips, because you're going to use this hand to take food from the communal bowl, put it on your own plate from there to your own mouth. So, colleagues, try eating like that and see how difficult it is.
No
licking. No, that's why we have the little bowl here to rinse. Yeah.
But you know, another way they eat that is that they put all kinds of mixtures on top of this and each one is just breaking a piece off.
Yeah.
And I put that top of the first one and somebody else that.
Yeah, and then in terms of a very formal banquet or a very nice environment, the chicken should be deboned. There shouldn't be bones in the meat at a steak banquet. Yeah, because that makes it really easy using the knife fork. Yeah. That's in the Middle East, in Saudi Arabia. But in Saudi Arabia, you must remember in Saudi Arabia, mostly the men and the women also don't eat together. They split it. But what they do, remember now, half of our cabinet is women. Because they are at the status, official status of cabinet members, ministers, they all received from the men as well.
Because they do, they
don't have that time, set up, no. No, set up. Yeah.
This is what, you know, people talk about the knife and fork. A lot of South Africans talk about the hook and knife, and it actually sounds like they're swearing.
But that's just very briefly. I thought I'd just mention it. It's a few, very few simple things. Otherwise, I mean, we're all in this environment. We're used to it. Yeah, because remember, with all those forks and knives, I mean, even if we're used to eating with it and everything, you don't do it at home because I don't want to end up with all that dishes and cutlery to wash every evening of my life. But it's something we should train our young children on as well because it makes them comfortable in an international environment. And South Africa being visited by so many international visitors is not just this little country anymore. It is an international environment. Yeah, from the of the cutlery, you know, sometimes you're confronted with all the shining cutlery and everything around you. Always take it per course from the outside working in. Outside in, and then the fork and spoon at the top will be your dessert fork and spoon. That fork is used to pin down the fruit because we all always serve fruit. And you eat with the spoon. You break off with the spoon the piece of fruit. You pin it down with the fork. You can help it with the fork into the spoon. But it's only if you eat dessert. Only cake is eaten with a dessert fork. Fruit, ice cream, etc. It's just an utensil to help you load the dessert onto the spoon. And then something I also want to mention, which is nice to me, is the bread that they serve, for instance, with the first entrance of soup. They might serve you a little bread roll. Now, that's, colleagues, where we use our hands. We break off a piece of bread with a hand. Never cut it through. You break it with a hand, and you only use that bread and knife to add a little butter on the piece that you're going to eat. You take a piece of butter, put it on the side of your plate, then you never butter the entire bun or slice. You only butter that little piece that you're going to eat. And what's interesting, why do we break the bread with the hand? What's the symbolism? We're breaking bread with friends at that table. It's symbolism behind it. And I always find it nice. Because they say, once you've broken bread with somebody at the table, you remain friends, you can talk. So there's a symbolism behind it. So please, next time, you know, it's not, I always tell, like, if you're busy doing the kid sandwiches for the school, then you butter the bread like that. But this is not the kid sandwich, this is where you do the elegant fine dining. Okay. No, you can say, please pass me the salt, and this is a good question. Because there's a salt and a pepper seller. Remember, they married. So if somebody asks you for the salt, you pass both together. They married, they move as a pair on that table. So then that person doesn't have to say, can I have the pepper also, you know. So you pass both when you pass it along. Okay, this was just a brief interlude. Yeah, we should go. What did we forget, sir? We wait for the host. Yeah. Okay, but what we must remember, we normally wait for the host and the guest of honor. But now at the state banquet, it's this table up here, and there's 250 people seated there. So So you can't base yourself according to this person. When they did their first course, you're still waiting there. When they're busy having their main course, you might be served the soup by that time, because that sometimes unfortunately happens. So you look at the table that you are seated at. If everybody has the first course in front of them, you look at each other and you can say, what that means, if the front table has now, the main table has started, then you watch that everybody has the same course in front, and you can say, bon appetit, and you start. Or in your own language, have a lovely meal. You don't have to use the French word. I'm just using it as a word. You can say, yeah, smakelijke eten, lovely meal, enjoy the food, whatever comes to mind. If it's a buffet. No, if it's a buffet, there's a very nice question. We get confused when it's a buffet. Because now they're on that beautiful buffet, they've got all the fish stuff together, and then they've got the red meats and the chicken. And the idea is, first you help yourself to something like fish with a bit of salad, blah, blah, blah. That's your first course. Or soup. They even serve soup there. Then you eat your soup or your first course. Then you go back, you leave your plate, and a good waiter is supposed to remove that plate from the table. Then you go back, you take a clean plate, and you dish for yourself with the main food, the meat, and whatever goes with that. And very interesting, at the state banquet, if it's a set dinner or any event where it's a set meal, you cannot ask for seconds, unfortunately. At a buffet, you don't have to put a lot of food on your plate, because you can stand up and you can go and get second, obviously. Yeah. But I always tell my young students, you know, the plates that we serve out of, we use the official plate. Now, it's got a little golden ring in there. Then I tell them, I'm watching you. Stay with inside the borders of the country. You're not allowed to leave yet. And no mountains in this country. If it's a buffet, you have the option of getting up and getting a second helping. So you help yourself first to the fish and what have you, and then you can enjoy it, and then you help yourself again to clean plate. Okay, I think... I won't comment on that one, sir. Okay, let's get back to the training. National orders. Now, what are those? Those are the highest awards that a country through its president bestows on its citizens. We've got 6 national orders. The president is the fount of honor again. I just want to go briefly through these ones. Order of Mapungubwe. That's for excellent and exceptional achievement in the international arena. Order of Baobab, distinguished service, business and economy, science, medicine, technological innovation and community service. And this is the order that we give to foreign nationals. The South African can't get this awarded. It's only for foreign nationals that have promoted the interests and aspirations of South Africa. Then Ikamanga, I always think about it. It's that beautiful flower that's called a Strelitzia. It's a fun one. The arts, culture, literature, music, journalism, and sport. And here I want to comment that I haven't seen You Must Care being awarded yet. I think we need to campaign. Then the Medi Declaration for Bravery. It was named after the SS Mendi. It's a ship that sank in the First World War. And it's to commemorate those brave South African soldiers who died during that battle. Yeah. It replies to, yeah. And this, the Menti Declaration is not only for people in the armed forces, it's for private citizens also. There was a person here from Cape Town who saved children from a burning shack to the peril of his own life. He survived and he was actually awarded this Menti Declaration. And then Order of the Tuli, struggle for democracy, human rights, nation building, justice and conflict resolution. And I just want to mention our previous Chief of Staff Protocol Ambassador Billy Modise was awarded the Order of the Tuli. And that's what an order looks like. No cash, it's an honor. It's simply an honor. Yes, yeah. You can use the title after your name. If you get invited, say Ambassador Mudding with DC gets invited to a function now, they must put on the envelope Ambassador B.I.L. Mudisi, comma, Order of Lituli, comma, then his address. You can put it as like, it's a title. It's like Sir or a Member of Parliament. Yeah, you can abbreviate it. Official photograph. This is an important one I want to discuss because I've seen today a lot of official photographs not being displayed correctly. GCIS is the government department. They can supply the correct ones for you. If you have only two principals, what does the rule say? Most important goes to the left of the spectator. Now, where I see the mistakes being made, South Africa is a democracy. It's a very democratic state. Because we are a democracy, all photographs are placed at the same level, same height. We no longer have steps. They must be placed equally at the same height. By placing the president to the left of the spectator here, and this is international, we're telling international visitors also, this person is the head of state. So if it's two, the rule says, president goes to the left. If it's three, the rule says, now the president goes to the middle. Next important, deputy president on your left. Our line function minister, in our case, on the right. And you can see again at the same height. Three principals. And incidentally, we only place our president, deputy president, ministers, premiers in the provinces, MECs in the provinces, and at municipal level, mayors. Yes, there is an order of seniority, like this one. Now, we know it's according to the appointment in office, but the president has the right to announce somebody as first deputy minister. When he sent out his cabinet, he announced Deputy Minister Ibrahim as first deputy minister. This explains it. Same. And this is what you see in front of our building in Pretoria at the entrance. And please note, everybody is on the same height. So I think, and what's interesting, so for instance, these people were going to address you this morning. They will be seated here in exactly that order in front of you. Yeah. Okay, in an instance like this, of course, you will have a MEC, a person doing the honors, and it would normally be the presidential spokesperson or the chief of state protocol, etc. Your keynote speaker, the most important speaker, speaks last. After that person, you can only thank and close the meeting. Because the keynote address has been delivered. You cannot comment on the president's speech. Pardon? And you'll have to keep it to yourself. Okay. So that is basically just, and it just makes, if you look at this rule, it makes the understanding of all protocols just so much easier. You want me to go back? The table of precedence. Okay. Do you have a table of precedence? Okay. I've brought one with. I just thought because the table of precedence, what is this thing? It's the arrangement of office bearers according to their order of seniority. It's published in the Government Gazette. There's the number. But to go and find it in the Government Gazette takes a lot of trouble. That's why I printed one out. But since 1996, you know, we were a young democracy. We actually realized that we made certain mistakes. We left out the chairman of the NCLP, the traditional monarchs, the executive mayors. And currently we're using the 2003 draft table of presidents when we need to seat people. I've brought it with me, so I can leave it with you, and I can always send it electronically if people need it. It still needs to be tabled, discussed, and approved by the president. But the president has given the instruction that we use it now because it makes provision for all the office bearers. Now, it contains 25 rubrics. I'm not going to discuss all of it here this morning. I just want to go up to 7 because it gives you an idea why one should use it when we place people and why we shouldn't place people as we perceive their importance to be. If you look at number 1A, it will say Head of State, Republic of South Africa. 1B will be Acting President. So when he leaves the country, he appoints Acting President. 2A, Deputy President. 2B is interesting. It says President-elect. So we make provision when he's elected, and once he's appointed, he moves up, when he's sworn in. 3A, interesting, the Chief Justice. Very high. And the rest of 3 is divided to the judiciary, constitutional court, etc., etc. 4A, former presidents in order of seniority. And there we will find Mr. Mandela, Mr. Mbeki. 4B, former executive deputy presidents. That's where Mr. de Klerk will be. 5 will be our cabinet ministers. And we know now how we decide the ranking order.
How about the former deputy president,
like Aleka? She will also feature at 4, yeah. So she will be at 4B. Normally, once they've left office, they go to the highest position that they have, except that they can't go to president. They can only go up to former president. 5 is the cabinet. 5A, the Speaker of the National Assembly. 5C, the Premier. They're very high. We tend to forget that. And this is the surprise. You remember the Dean of the Foreign Diplomatic Corps? He sits at 6A in South Africa. And 6B will be your ambassadors and high commissioners. 6C will be your envoys extraordinary, the envoys. And then the rest goes to the diplomatic corps, heads of UN agencies. Interesting, 6G. Chief of State Protocol, because he has a function supporting the ministers and the president, etc., and the deputy president. So we place him high so that he can be near to give support. 6H is the Acting Chief of State Protocol. 7A, Deputy Ministers. We tend to think the deputy ministers is higher than the premiers. They're not. And what we train our young people, you know, at the working at ceremonial and protocol, is take this, laminate it, and use it. Don't place people the way you think they should be blessed. Bless them according to the table. I just want to mention something interesting. Our DG is at 11C, the DG of Foreign Affairs, International Relations. He's higher than the rest of the DGs. The rest of them are at 18 somewhere. Members of Parliament, they are here somewhere. They are there. But I'm going to leave this with you, because in working in this environment, it's good to have the ranking order, to know how it fits. Judiciary. I agree with you, sir. I agree with you. That's why I think this. There's something wrong. This needs revision. The speaker. Yes, and it doesn't gel for me. So that's why this is a draft table of presidents, and I wish it would be discussed. Because it doesn't always make sense to me. It should be tabled at Parliament, discussed at cabinet level, approved, and then signed off by the President. This committee can bring it up, because I think this needs to be discussed.
And it can also
be it's the draft table, 2003 suggested table of presidents. But even the 1996 table of presidents, the 1996 one, the approved one, has the speaker too low. Because how can the speaker call together parliament when it's lower than... I fully agree with you, sir. So if this could be taken up, this whole planning exercise will be absolutely worthwhile.
Yes, not for the purposes of MP, but for the purposes of MP.
I'm trying to see how. That's the second. I'm going to give it to you while I go on, because we're running a bit out of time. But I do agree with this meeting that this is something that it would be good if it received attention, because it still needs to be approved, and it can't be approved like that. The speaker is definitely not in a high enough position there. It must be discussed at cabinet level. But it's something that can be brought up. You know, the processes in Parliament, I must be very honest with you, this is parliamentary protocol, is not my strong point here. This is not what I train on. But it would be so good if this was discussed. So, because then once it's approved, it's published in a government gazette, and we start using... You know, then I can implement the other one and train on it and say, this is how you should use it. You know, and there might still even be people that they've left out that can be brought in. But what's good about our table of presidents is that it doesn't give names. It gives positions. You will find some countries, for example, the United States of America, there it's names. And people give a position lifelong. For example, Senator Ted Kennedy, who died the other day, he was at 42. And once he's at 42, it opens up 42 once he dies. It's completely different. Every country changes it. But this one is very modern, and it's very user-friendly, because it's about positions, it's not about people. Now, we use it when we see people, when we present dignitaries, And it's interesting, you never introduce the principals, for example, the president and the minister. I can never say, colleagues, it's my pleasure to introduce to you today our minister. It's assumed we must know the chief office bearer. You would rather use the phrase, it's my honor to welcome in our midst. It's my honor to welcome in our midst, or you can say, our minister will now be addressing. But you cannot say, I am introducing the minister to you, mm-hmm. or the president. Because it's assumed we should know who's the president, who's the minister. Okay. Arrival and departure dance, your most senior person arrives last and leaves first. And nobody can leave before that person leaves at the meeting. Now, and once the president has arrived, and you late, you cannot enter. That's actually good protocol. You have to wait for a break in proceedings before entering there. Okay. It's about serving meals. I'm going to come back to this one. Now, the spouse or spouses of the president shall enjoy the same precedence as the president, even when the president is not present. The ranking order of the spouses is determined by the president himself. So if the president was going to attend this meeting, accompanied by a spouse, and he informs us, unfortunately, he has to attend the frontline summit, my spouse will still attend. The spouse takes 1A, even if the president is not. Aircraft, your most senior person boards last and it disembarks first. That's just a very nice protocol photo showing our minister welcoming the president on the opening or inauguration of our new building. I love the way the minister presents. She does it beautifully. She really does it with such great style. Not in South Africa. Gender equality, sir. Forms of address, difference between written and verbal. When an envelope is addressed to a person in office, the spouse is not included. We only say, and partner, on the invitation that goes inside. So you have to take the invitation out to see if the spouse is included in the meeting. Or the other function. Letters denoting abbreviations of orders, decorations, and professions follow the name of the bearer on the envelope, and decorations of honor precede MP. I've given you the example of Ambassador Billy Medici, how you use a decoration of honor, but say for instance we're inviting Minister Dlamini Zuma to a function. We will say on the envelope, Dr. N.C. Dlamini Zuma, comma, MP, Member of Parliament, and then we put Minister of what area. So MP goes in front there. And this is interesting. Since 1 June, no person in office bears the title the Honourable or Your Honour, with the exception of judges, and I want to add here, and within the exception of Parliament. Member Parliament is a different protocol environment. So in Parliament you use the Honourable, but once outside of Parliament you don't use it anymore. No. The Honourable, yeah. But once you're inside Parliament you are the Honourable. Because it's the Westminster parliamentary system, and this is a special protocol environment in here. It's a high protocol environment, and one should use this address, the Honourable or Your Honour.
So outside you are the Member of Parliament.
Member of Parliament, yeah. In the provinces, in the legislative assemblies also, people use the Honourable. I always remember it like, you honour the law, legislative. And this is just a few forms of address. We've mentioned the president. The deputy president is Mr. Deputy President. In South Africa, we simply address a minister as a minister. Our protocol is actually nice. It's not so full of nonsense. Cabinet ministers say the speaker is Mr. or Madam Speaker. Foreign heads of mission, we went into that, his or her excellency. Then a few foreign forms of address. A head of state, your excellency. A king or a queen is your majesty. And that also goes for our traditional monarchs. Prime minister is your excellency, or Mr. or Madam Prime Minister. The UK is interesting. He's the Right Honourable David Cameron. The UK has got titles like you've never seen before. Mm-hmm. And that's actually what we want to do in our own country. We want to move away from that very stiff protocol. Yes, we observe protocol, we give honour, but we want to make it more simplified. Yeah, they use your worship for a judge in another country. It's always remembering, honouring the law. In some countries, remember, colleagues, do in Rome what the Romans do. If you ever go to Kenya, you will hear that every second person is referred to as honourable. And they even shorten it. They call each other on. So we need to observe in which environment we function. Everybody's a chief. Yeah. So You have to look at the country you're in. There's an interesting title for you, the Pope, if ever he visits again. The Dalai Lama is your holiness. The Pope of the Russian and the Greek Orthodox Church is your all holiness. There's a few more titles. Your grace is for the Archbishop. We've got that also. There's the nuncio. He's your excellency because he's an ambassador. A consul general remains a consul general. Remember, a consul general is lower than a high commissioner or ambassador. They report to the ambassador and high commissioner. It sounds so grand, and we tend to think it's not. It's lower. A duke. Consular issues, yes. But in some places, if people say, I'm the consul general, then they think, oh, it's like the king that's arrived, and it's not. It's not that difficult to become one. Okay, there's a few more. Mayor, there's your worship for the mayor. But this is just a golden formula. If we're not sure of a person's title, sir or madam, until you, this gives you time to find out and listen, because protocol is about observing. You can't just walk into an environment. You need to feel it, to observe how are things done. But in the meantime, while you're observing, sir or madam. We sometimes use madam. I actually prefer madam because English is. Then just the golden formula for introducing people, because this we often have to do. You mention the most important person first, Mr. President. Then you say, may I introduce, and you say the name. Her Excellency, Dr. X. Dr. X is the new ambassador of Timbuktu. You say something about this person that you're introducing to the senior. It's a social grace. So then the person can turn around and say, oh, your excellency, welcome in South Africa. When are you presenting credentials? And how do you find the country? And how long have you been here? And when have you arrived? Because remember, I told the president, the new ambassador. You see. So that's basically. So it's always the junior to the senior, and you use the phrase, may I introduce. And then remember, the lovely South Africans, be careful of extending the hand. As you take your cue from the senior person. The senior person extends a hand, you can shake the hand. If not, you simply have to say, pleased to meet you, or I'm honored to meet you.
I had a meeting with a mother of a pedophile last week. He has not been presented his credential. I was like, I can't wait.
Yeah. But you know now why you can't wait. You can realize to them it's a very important day. And remember, they can't really function or go to a function or represent the country before that credential is not delivered. Yeah, but the men wouldn't do that to you. No, the men wouldn't. Because I remember also when I first met the Iranian ambassador there, my chief of protocol said, be very careful also how you're dressed. And remember, this is the most extreme example. You find a lot of Muslim countries, for example, North Africa, West Africa. Certain things they are strict with, for instance, the halal food. But otherwise, they're not that, it has different degrees. This is more or less the Saudi example, which is much more close, you know. So for instance, if I go as a diplomat to Saudi, I can't go shopping on my own, even if I'm a diplomat. I have to wear that black habit, and I have to have a person, a male person from the embassy, taking me shopping and I have to walk behind. Otherwise, I'm considered a woman of very low morals. It's in their country. Yeah. It's in Iran, what is nice thing is women, they are normally, they can get educated. They are well educated, they go to universities, that some of them are highly qualified people, but they go to women universities. They don't have the universities mixed. The hospitals are not mixed. Yeah.
What all of us are. You know, I've had an experience of moving from Middle East to Europe.
Yes.
In my previous job.
Yes, sir.
You know, you get into a flight with other people wearing all the things, as it's flying to London.
Yeah.
Maybe 2 hours before you land, you see people queuing going into the toilet. When they come out of the toilet, they look at the beautiful person, all these things that are around
them. Yeah.
But I've seen it, and you go many times.
Yes, the restrictions in some of those countries. Yeah. And what's important when we go there, I know even our minister, when she goes to Saudi, before she steps out of the aircraft. Yeah, because it's to be received, to conform, and to be received, to give respect, and to show her standing. Yeah. Yeah. This is our country. Yeah. It's you know, I can't discuss this, but I've handled many guests in my 15 years and seen some guests, and I'm not naming the countries, but when they arrive in South Africa, once they walk out of that aircraft, they're different people, which I don't comment on. Yeah. Okay, the official entertainment, we had a bit of discussion there.
The greeting, you said in some countries there's no
greeting. No greeting,
What do you do?
Yeah, you can simply sort of do this. Because in our black African culture, we've got this nice way of doing this. And that is accepted. Something that we also need to be careful about, I just mentioned the Muslim countries, but remember the Far East. They also a non-touching nation. Japanese and Chinese people don't like to be touched by foreigners. I think maybe it's because there's so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
They prefer this bowing. You will find some Japanese businessmen, because they love going to America, you know, and they pick up this habit of, but when I've been to Japan a few times, they will simply stop. They don't touch you. Yeah. And because we have a lot of people from Japan and China and Malaysia and those countries coming over to our country, just a little thing we should observe. You know, it's the little things that make us fall down. Never use a tissue or a handkerchief in public.
Mm.
To them, it's the most terrible manners on earth.
Wow.
Yeah. Bathroom. Yeah. You know, I want to share with you this. When I was out there on a visit in Japan, and I was leading a delegation, I had the most terrible flu that you could imagine.
Mm.
I spent more time in the bathroom than in the meeting room.
Sure.
It's definitely, they observe that as not good manners. There's a very nice book, Kiss, Bow, or Shake Hands. It's available from Exclusive Books. If you go to Google and you type it in, Kiss, Bow, or Shake Hands, I think the editor is Terry Morrison. It gives you all the do's and don'ts of the various cultures in the world. It's a new book and it got various prizes. It's very well written. Because I think for us people, you know, working on the international arena, it's good just to have something like that to browse through. Okay. Official entertainment. Not much that I'm going to say here today. Unfortunately, with the shortness of our training, I can't do the official cutlery thing that I normally do. On another invitation, when we come again, I might be able to come with that as well. But just what I want to mention, for every event, even if it's a little event, write a program. Because a program helps you package or manage an event. Even if it's a little event, it's worthwhile doing a program.
Yes.
If it says black tie, the dress code, it means a dark suit, it means a white shirt. And in South Africa, we're a bit more relaxed, but I always think a man looks very nice with a bow tie. It actually means a bow tie. But because in South Africa, because we're relaxed, a dark, more conventional tie would also do the thing. Luckily, we don't wear the tails and the top hats and the things here. We are more relaxed. It's a dark suit. Yeah. Formal. If it says formal, because it's very confusing, that black tie will be a state banquet. Black tie is the state banquet. That would be black tie. That's black tie. But if it's formal, it means any tie. And if something says formal, it's always good to be more on the conservative side. Yeah, our young black men and white men, all of them, the young people, they've got these very funky ties. And if a thing says formal, I personally like these beautiful colored shirts. It's very beautiful. But if it's a very formal environment, a white shirt. Or maybe green colored, but a white crisp shirt does it. And remember, a dark suit is not brown. It must be black or charcoal. It's not brown or navy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a dark suit. It's formal. That will do. Yeah. But it cannot be like a light colored suit or a colored shirt, etc. But luckily in South Africa, we're not that restricted in our dress code. And something that's wonderful, traditional. Traditional is beautiful. Now, women have it easier, ladies should look at what the invitation says to the men. If it says black tie, you know you can go all out. And what I want to mention, because we are a mixed cultural society and we move so much on the international arena, ladies, if you're not wearing traditional, it's always good to have a beautiful formal type of jacket. Don't go to sleeveless, because you become less formal when you're completely sleeveless. And you never know what the society is that you're going to move in. Low neckline is not formal. Low neckline. Look at the environment. If you go to the Miss South Africa pageant, that's a different thing. But if you go to a formal banquet, because we move on such an international arena, and we want to show respect to people who find it very difficult, it's better that we raise the neckline. This is just an example of an invitation. This is the invitation that we have on our internet. We always put dietary requirements, because it's not only halal or kosher or Hindu, but remember, there's some people with dietary restrictions. They're allergic to food. So we must put that when we say something out. Only thing I also want to comment here, the time. We say 1900 for 1930. It means by 10 to 7, you're ready to walk in. You have to be there, standing in the reception room by 1900. Because 19 to 1930 means you've been given welcoming refreshments, people are moved into the reception, etc. It doesn't mean you can arrive between 19 and 1930. There seems to be a bit of confusion there. You can use both. It doesn't matter. You can use the colon or the H. Then I just also want to mention for replying, it's good to use the international RSVP, responde s'il vous plaît. Because don't use this regrets only. People simply ignore, they don't answer that they're not coming. RSVP gives you a correct head count. And you say by a certain date. And it's correct etiquette if a person hasn't applied by that date. They could phone you and say, Madam or Sir, will you be attending the function? You can phone them and ask, will you be coming? If they haven't replied by that day. And it's actually not good manners to wait till somebody phones you. You should reply yes or no, I'm not coming. And then something that's interesting, you know, in our culture, there's always room for more. That's the South African culture. But when we do banquets, these very formal events, we cannot just take somebody with. So what they do these days, they put there, please present this invitation to the entrance because it's a form of accreditation. And they also put it's not transferable and it's not good. To, you know, say for instance, you're going to this banquet, now you've got visitors arriving at your home. You say, oh, no, man, you know, this is South Africa, come. You can come with. If it's a very formal event, you cannot do that. That's the thing, you know, it's a different culture we're in, but on the international arena. Please note, I'm not saying on the private arena, because with us, there's always food or the room for another soul. We don't have a problem with that. This is just showing you, unfortunately, I'm still waiting for my new slides of our current president, the one of the previous presidents, Mr. Mbeki, when he received the head of state from Indonesia. I don't think I have to explain. You can see the protocol rule now working. You're welcome, sir. It's the prerogative of that person to choose who the partner will be. But just something that I would mention here. I wouldn't mind taking my 24-year-old son as my partner. But I can't take a child of 5. We must just, as people, distinguish there. Because a child of 5 is going to get bored within 10 minutes, if not 5, with proceedings like that. It's not a good training ground for a little child. But if you want to take your 16, 17-year-old daughter and or son, and that child is used to moving in an environment like that, by all means. But just remember, is that child going to be able to function in the environment I'm placing the child in? That's all I can say on that. You're welcome. Yes. No, we remember protocol always sounds out beforehand. This is not an extreme environment, it's Indonesia, they had no problem. But you sometimes have people have a problem, they don't want to be split up, then we don't do it. Because in terms of protocol, we're sensitive. And South African protocol is not rigid. That's something that, thank heavens, we don't apply it, you know, like rigidly, like in a military fashion. Sir, was it the same question you wanted?
Yeah, but what then is the place of the spouse?
The spouse of the guest sits on the other side of our head of state, and we place our spouse next to the foreign head of state. It's to create conversation. It's just a social grace. But if you have a country, as we mentioned here, where they found this is not acceptable to them, we don't do it. This is just a general setup that we use. What is interesting, we always check at the tables when we do the setups that there's mixed South African, other country, that each table is at least hosted by a minister. And we must remember there are countries in the world that don't get along. So you cannot put the Iranian and American ambassador at the same table. Or we can't put Palestine and Israel. They get up and they leave, some of those countries. Yes, but what we also must be careful of, and that we also check, and never, everybody doesn't always remember to do that, we also check the passages, so that when they get up and they move the chairs back, they're not elbowing each other as well. Because, no, not at a social event like that. You're not going to solve the crisis at the party. Yeah, some of them are practically at war. It's very serious. No, you can't put them together. This is just a general setup for our banquets. We've got a main table with round tables. I think you've experienced this. This is the standard South Africa banquet setup. Like in any other country, we put the white or cream tablecloth napkins, but we don't always use the silver underplate. We sometimes use handmade wooden or these beautiful African mats or things like this, just to give it South African flavor. And this is another setup that was to honor Madam Miriam Makeba after she had passed away. That's why it's black here. signing ceremony. That's for the signing of agreements, memorandum, minutes, joint communique, followed by a press conference, and there's your setup again. I think it's now familiar to you. This is always done on South African soil, and this is the real thing happening there in front of you. You can sometimes have respective ministers signing while the heads of state look on. That's just another setup. This is the setup at the press briefings at the union buildings. See, we actually have these diagrams that we put in a state visit book to make things explainable to the foreign visitors as well. The books that we print for the programs are actually very, very beautiful. This is at Tainais. It depends on the room also. You have to look at the room. Then dress code, I think we've discussed a bit here. A professional appearance in our department because we work on the international arena. This I just want to mention, the standard. If you're not wearing traditional, is a suit, a jacket, and pants or a skirt, or a dress bed with appropriate accessories, and a mini skirt in this environment is never appropriate. Mm-hmm. Now I'm thinking of my young diplomats. Traditional, there's different styles, etc. The only thing that I want to comment on in terms of traditional, if you do the traditional dressing, it's beautiful, it's stunning, do it, go out and do it properly, not just halfway, do it well. It gives splendor to our banquets, our luncheons, our dinners, and our formal events. It just makes this country much more beautiful. This is traditional at just an event. The protocol lounges, I mentioned the three that we have. This is the King Shaka New Lounge. Very beautiful. That's our protocol officers at the lounges. That's the way they look. Pleasure, man. Okay, in terms of who's allowed to visit this lounge, there's a very strict protocol policy. I met the director of the protocol lounges yesterday, and she told me that they're actually busy revising it. It will be available on the departmental website. They're just revising it at the moment. Normally it goes up to deputy minister level. Heads of mission on entering a country and departure. The lounges are very busy. I know that O.R. Tambo processed 18,000 people last year. So it's a small staff. It's not that big, so they're limited. But I think there is a protocol lounge policy. What is important is that people apply in writing, or you can phone the director to find out if anybody is qualifying. If they're not that busy, they might also make exceptions. So, for instance, you receiving a parliamentary portfolio committee from another country and you want them to go through the lounge. There's no harm in just asking, will they be able to? This is at O.R. Tambo, what it looks like. Beautiful. Then I just want to talk a bit about diplomatic inviolability. What does it mean? It's the term that is used to express the rule that no agent of the receiving state or its citizens may interfere with anyone entitled to immunities and privileges. And it's governed according to the Diplomatic Immunities and Privileges Act. There's an act in South Africa, and it's based on the Vienna Convention, as well as the Convention on the Immunities and Privileges of the UN, and specialized agencies, and it's also according to bilateral agreements. Because if a country does a lot for our diplomats, we tend to reciprocate. Now, what is the immunity? They are immune from jurisdiction in civil proceedings. There may be certain restrictions. They are immune from jurisdiction in criminal proceedings. The mission is inviolable, the person, the luggage, the vehicles. The personal effects may not be searched. There are certain exceptions, for instance, on a flight, because where it concerns the safety of an aircraft or the safety of a person, then they have to go through the scanners as well. And this is according to international aviation law, and it especially came into practice after 9/11, that they now, you know, one of those things. That's why, you know, they still put it through the scanners these days. Yeah. But unfortunately, you will always have people abusing a privilege. Now, what are the remedies of a sending state? If we don't treat their diplomats correctly, it's called a breach of international law, and they may approach the International Court of Justice. They can demand an apology or a correction or a wrong. If it's very serious, the sending state may break diplomatic relations. Okay. Now, if they don't behave here, we also have rights. We can demand an official apology. If it's a serious case, we can request the sending state to waiver the immunity, and then we can prosecute that person. It has happened. Or we can ask the sending state to recall the offending diplomat. Diplomats are also bound to respect the law. And if all else fails, and we're not getting anywhere, and it was a serious offense, we declare the person persona non grata, it's stamped onto the passport, and they are given 24 hours to leave the country. But you can imagine this is a very serious offense. Then I also want to mention something. In terms of the diplomatic practice, to show your dislike in something, you can also temporarily recall your ambassador. We did it the other day with the Palestine-Israeli issue. We recalled our ambassador from Israel. That's a diplomatic move to say we really don't think you're doing the right thing. But it's just a temporary thing. They took note. They sent a note about to mention that they basically, in nice language, they actually saw what we meant and they took note and they will look at the situation, etc. So you recall your ambassador just for a certain period, and then you send him back again. This is what the diplomatic cards look like, that we, because remember they get like a passport when they're in our country. The red D, if somebody produces their diplomatic card to you, if you see a square red D, it means you're speaking to the ambassador or the high commissioner. That's the back of the card. This is the different categories. The red is for full diplomatic immunities and privileges. The yellow are the consular staff. They only have immunities and privileges while they are doing their duties, their job. And the green is certain privileges, just administrative, international, or temporary. And then you will also see the vehicle registration numbers. You can't search their vehicles. The red, the full diplomats, the green are the other categories. Cultural differences.
What about that? You talk about the institute immune to persecution. They come with the speed of car in another country. What is it? They are not being arrested.
If our diplomats, we can recall them. We can simply recall them, bring them home, and then what we can do an investigation, and there can also be a civil case Exile our country, yeah. Because you see, for us, if our diplomats don't behave, we normally recall them, because it's showing your country in a very bad light, and our minister sees it as a very serious offence. Yes. I don't think I should comment because it's still in process at this moment. I don't know where the case is currently, so I don't want to comment on a case that's still going on. But they normally we recall. Yeah, we have recalled. Yeah. Now we normally recall because it's better for us to recall and solve our problems on our own soil. Okay. I just want to mention, if ever you go abroad on a parliamentary visit or something, remember that for every country that we have political dealings with or relations, at the department there's a bilateral business unit, and they compile a country profile, a background, a social country profile, statistics on trade, etc. And you can request for them to send you that profile, because of course it prepares you very well for that country, and it's available. Then I just also want to mention, in terms of culture, we must be careful of using hand gestures. You know, South Africans, we speak with our hands. You know, if we say the meeting went well, we say sharp, sharp, and things like that. In some countries, these gestures have a different meaning. And because you move so much on the international arena, just be very careful about that. Yeah. Etiquette, I don't think I need to say much there, except that it's individual and it's cultural. Oh, what have we got here now? Oh, my goodness. No, we're being to hibernate now. What's going on here now? Yeah, I must have done something somewhere I shouldn't have.
Carry up there.
Talk on again. We're nearly at the end of our presentation, and here, the technical support, we're nearly at the end, because I know you need to also to, there's a few things I just wanted to show you before we close the meeting. While we're waiting, I just want to mention also that's why we lost the battery. What I want to mention, a state visit. Who can have a state visit? Only a head of state can have a state visit. And only a head of state can ask another head of state to visit the country on a state visit. So invitation is normally done at the same level. Head of state, the president will invite the president. A president can invite the head of government. For instance, our president can invite the Queen of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, or he can invite the Right Honourable David Cameron. But if David Cameron comes on a visit, it's called an official visit. That's the difference. That's the categories of visit. Then we also have what's called official visits. Ministers, all these people, they have official visits. The deputy president has official visits. He goes out on official visits. We also have what is called working visits. That will be for a bi-national commission or things like that. And then, of course, we have what is called special visits. That will be an inauguration, or when the people came for the World Soccer Cup, things like that. And then we have private visits. And it's normally these private visits that make our airports so full. Because if a head of state comes to South Africa on a private visit, or these special categories of visitors, they still get VIP protection. It's our duty to make sure they're safe when they're in our country. Okay. Here we are. Thank you. Sorry about that. Okay, this is just in the office. I just want to mention something here. An organization's image, its appearance, dress code, attitude, etc. The most important person in any organization, security and reception. That's where the image is formed. And that's where we need really to train people. Because it's no use if somebody's going to come and see our minister and that person is not trained, received correctly at entry point by reception or by security. By the time they get to the minister, we've lost it. So that is just something I want to mention that we must give attention to. And also, unexpected visitors should be treated with the same care as an expected visitor. Phones, how we answer, a few things, good morning, good afternoon, goodbye, not to say sorry, but regret, who's it, say again, those are phrases we should refrain from. That's not just if we're official. May I help you? May and would and could are nice phrases to use in English in terms of official etiquette. Difficult callers. Yeah. Yeah. Remain calm. A trick is to empathize. You empathize with somebody, you diffuse the anger. Do not sigh. Let them talk. Ask questions. Apologize. Offer to help. Separate the fact from the emotion. And try and end the call on a positive note. Then I spoke a bit on official visits. I just want to mention those are the visits where heads of state government, foreign dignitaries, and VIPs visit our country and the other way around. Whatever the nature of these visits, they are actually used to market the country. They're not just there for entertainment or because we feel obliged to do it. Now, the mandate of state protocol is to plan, execute, and manage the visit. Outgoing will be the president, the deputy president, our ministers, and deputy ministers, and, of course, special envoys as well. Incoming, foreign heads of state, government, spouses, reigning royalty. For example, if Mr. Ban Ki-moon, when he came to South Africa, it becomes our responsibility. Deputy Ministers and Ministers of International Relations, special envoys. Now, what do? We align the program of incoming and outgoing visits. There's a state visit operational procedure guidelines on how we manage this. And it doesn't matter whether it's a visit from President Mugabe or whether it's President Obama. It's managed according to the same operational guidelines. Because if it's a head of state, it's a head of state, and we must give the same honors and respect and courtesy. We conduct briefings to the president, deputy president, provide direct protocol support, and coordinate interdepartmental logistics. We facilitate the ceremonial occasions, provide meetings requirements, assist the visiting delegation, and secure the appropriate gifts. Then we spoke about the state visit. This is just a category, so official visit, working visit, that's the Presidential Economic Commissions, etc., a special envoy, and the private visit. Special visit will be like an inauguration. A transit visit. We have a lot of transit visits because we sit on this international route, Cape Town, O.R. Tambo. I think a lot of the people going through there are VIPs on transit visits. Former heads of state. A state visit will have an arrival and departure ceremony at the port of entry, an official welcome ceremony, a tete-a-tete, that will be the bilateral meeting, an official meeting taking the rest of the delegation in, a signing ceremony if there's agreements to be signed, courtesy call by the deputy president on that head of state. Remember, the The head of state cannot go and see our deputy president. It must be the other way around. Freedom of the city, joint address to the joint sitting of parliament, a state banquet, a business seminar the next day. There will be a spousal program, a civil society program. The arrival ceremony will have certain things that must be in place. And that's the diagram for the arrival ceremony, how we do it. And let me show you the real footage. Okay, I just want to mention something. The most important visitor descends first, boards at last. Same goes for a train. Your most important seat in any vehicle in the world. The seat in the back of the car across from the driver. So there you will know this is the most important seat. The seat of honor on the right-hand side of the host or hostess. If introduced to a head of state or government or an important person, one should rise. Reception line is also arranged according to that order of precedence. About. This is what our ceremonial guard looks like at an aircraft when a head of state's aircraft comes in. It's a silent arrival because we do it at our international airports, so we can't have gun salutes going off there. That's again our minister. Remember, in terms of our protocol guidelines, our head of state doesn't go to the airport. He sends the Minister of International Relations to welcome the foreign visitor.
Is there a problem with some of the
aircraft? Yes.
The yes,
we had President Gaddafi. He didn't want to get out of the aircraft until the President came to the... But this is normal procedure. They don't have a problem because this also takes place abroad. Why we don't have the official welcoming is because, remember, it's an international airport. We don't bring the international traffic to a standstill. These airports are simply too busy. So we reserve it for Tainhuis as well as the Union Building.
What happened to the
yes, the President had to meet him. Because he was then still president-elect. So he said he's going out not as head of state, that was before he was sworn in, he's going out as president-elect. You see, in terms of protocol, there is a difference. President-elect is 2B, head of state is 1A.
Now I understand.
Diplomacy.
Diplomacy.
Yeah. You have to find a way. That is just Mr. Oyana doing the Acting Chief of State Protocol honors, receiving the Governor General of Canada. And if they come in at Kruger International, we fly everybody up there, first port of entry, we have to do it. The official welcoming ceremony is at Tainhuis or Union Buildings. If it's a head of state, they get a 21-gun salute. If it's an official visit, it's a 19-gun salute. And that's basically the difference. Inspection of the guard, the national anthems, the receiving lines, the bilateral meetings, all these ceremonies. We have a set way that it takes place. This will be the Union Buildings diagram. And this is the very nice one. There we have Union Buildings. You can see the arrival with the heads of state. The start is just to the back of the heads of state. And you can see the visiting parties to our left, the ruling. This is the inspection of the guard of honor at the Union Buildings. That's the Governor General of Canada inspecting the guard. With the Guard Commander. That is Chancellor Merkel of West of Germany. That's against President of Congo Brazzaville. Very nice uniform. That is at, this was at a credential ceremony where we had the Guard of Honor as well. We have a small Guard of Honor also giving. That's just our president walking here. A working lunch. This is normally the setup which we use for a working lunch. All that I want to comment, it works very well because we put the main people directly across from each other at the table and not at the heads of the table, because then the distance is too far to have discussions. And what we do these days, we leave the ends of the table open so that if there's a note taker or a person that we didn't know about coming to that, we simply add on. So we basically always prepared. Then just to conclude, virtues of good protocol, punctuality, courtesy. We can never be too precise. Attention to detail. Knowledge of human nature, culture, communication. Presence of mind or thinking on your feet, that comes with presence. And something that we always tell everybody when we train them on protocol is teamwork. And we don't have problems, we call it challenges. And what makes our protocol in South Africa also unique, the principles of Ubuntu, Batupele. And with this, I want to say thank you so much for this opportunity.
Merci.
Merci beaucoup. Kia ala. Gifts. You know, gifts is a very touchy subject. What should happen? We are busy compiling a gift policy as well. It's not final, but this is something that should also be presented to you. You must take culture into consideration. Again, here the Muslim culture. In terms of their religion, only God can create. So you cannot give them a statue of a rhinoceros or a painting of a person or a chess set with little people on. It must be something more cultural-like, something that works well in our culture. Those beautiful African pots, beautifully boxed with the history of the artist and the region that it's from. And in terms of gifts, what I think is important, that we give something that says something of the country. You know, to present a person just with a silver tray, I mean, it doesn't say much, but something more cultural of the beautiful art stuff, and it also benefits the young artists, the people in our country, the arts and crafts people who depend on that as a living. There's a special protocol program written for state and official Fiona. Yes, I must just find out where it is, but there is definitely. I just want to mention something while you're speaking about state and official funerals. Normally we drape the coffin with a flag there. It's just come to my mind now that you mention. It's correct. But just remember, before the coffin is lowered into the ground, the flag must be removed ceremoniously. It gets rolled up and then is presented to the next of kin of the deceased person. So it's a very special thing, but the flag cannot be buried because then it symbolizes you burying the country. You cannot do that. Okay. But there's a special, the presidency actually has that, but I do know it does exist. I will find out for you, sir.
Thank you.
The VIP will be a head of state. It depends also on your function. You have to look at who you're inviting. So, for instance, there's heads of state, heads of government, ministers. You have to see where you cut off. It depends on the function that you're hosting. I can't just say here, this is a VIP, this is a VVIP. You must look at the dynamics of the function that you're hosting. But VVIP will be heads of state, heads of government. If I just have to roughly categorize like this. I hope I've been able to convey something to you. As I say, most of these things, you move in this environment and you actually have noted it. It's just that you might not have formalized it, that's all. But you're in this protocol environment on a daily basis. It's interesting, it's wonderful, and thank you so much.
No, thank you very much. On behalf of the committee, let me thank you. It's very important, as you are saying it. It's part of our lives as MPs. We move around through our committees, and we represent the country at different levels. And, of course, we meet with a lot of diplomats, even here at home. So it's really assisting, but there's a lot involved.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for this, and we hope that you'll be able to send those to our secretaries. And it also means that there's a lot of work we have to do, just reading and trying to remember all you're saying, some of the things which you have to go just through them before you go into some meetings. It's a very interesting, it's a very dynamic thing. Thank you very much. Then, colleagues, we've come to the end of the session. Friday, International Treaties. Thank you. 9 o'clock.